Welcome to episode 20 of the Rescue Swimmer Mindset Podcast. I'm Cody Wright. So for today's episode, we're going to cover a few different topics. I'm going to start off by talking about the coronavirus and the overall American economy and how it relates to joining the military and kind of when it's a good time to join the military and when kind of the demand for joining the military is going to be high and when it's going to be easier to find jobs in the military that you'd like to fill. I'm going to move on after that and talk a little bit about base building and healthy progression in your training. And that's going to be kind of the bulk of today's episode. We're going to cover heart rate training zones and a little bit about the overall goals of training, kind of the overarching idea of training and how to maximize your readiness to get through elite military training. And in the final portion of the episode, we're going to do a Q&A. So I have a few questions that I got throughout the course of the week, and I'm just going to cover them, and that will end the episode. So for the first topic, I just wanted to talk a little bit about joining the military and the kind of the American economy and even kind of coronavirus. So I'm sure you're following the news recently. The coronavirus has been like sweeping the world, although I don't think it's nearly as bad as the news would indicate. It has had significant impacts on the American and worldwide economy. And this relates to joining the military in one major way, and that is when the economy is going great and people can find jobs, unemployment rate is low, most people decide not to join the military. So the demand for joining the military is low, meaning there's going to be a easier process to get in. There's going to be less, the recruiters are going to be less selective about who they let in, and the ASVAB scores and requirements to get in can be kind of changed to fit the overall need for people joining. And this, a lot of times, you can see this in waivers. So if there's a lot of people who want to join the military, someone who needs a medical waiver might not be picked up over someone who doesn't need one, even though the person who needs a medical waiver is a slightly better applicant, because it's just not worth the extra time to go through and get that medical waiver for the recruiter. And the person who doesn't need one can just sign the paperwork and ship off to boot camp. So basically, if the economy is kind of going south and people are losing jobs, unemployment rate is rising, there's going to be a higher demand for people. People are going to want to join the military because it's a secure job. And it kind of looks like what's happening right now. So as far as that relates to the Coast Guard, when you get out of boot camp, you go to your unit as a non-rate, you're going to have to put your name on an A-School list. When I joined in 2011, the economy was kind of coming out of the Great Recession that happened roughly 2007 into 2011-ish time frame. So a lot of the A-School lists were really long because there was a ton of people who had just joined the Coast Guard because they were out of jobs looking for a secure paycheck. And that basically meant being a non-rate. It was an extended time of being a non-rate. So some of the A-School lists were 3 to 4 years long. I know the ME A-School list at the time was like 36 plus months. The Rescue Swimmer list was 1 to 2 years, or I think 1 year to 18 months. And now I know it's a lot shorter. And that kind of reflects the overall economy. So just keep that in mind. And if you don't pay attention to those sort of abstract or kind of market details, maybe it's a good thing to just kind of check up. And if you're planning on joining the military, just keep that in mind. So I'm going to move on to base building and healthy progression. So this kind of pairs with a write-up I posted on my website, rsmguide.com, a few months ago, or probably like 2 months ago. And I don't think it's up there now to read, but maybe I can send it out, or I'll attach it to the show notes on this podcast so you can go through and read it. But really, my intention on this article I wrote and what I'm going to cover now is coming up with a actionable set of steps and establishing an overall goal that's going to kind of build up your skill set and your mindset towards becoming the best form of the most optimized version of yourself in terms of applying that to elite military training. And I call it base builder because that's exactly what it is. It's the base. So once you build up these skills and your mindset, you can then apply it to your training. Excuse me. So kind of the overarching goal is to improve your ability to deal with uncertainty. And what follows this is going to be the steps that you need to go through to get to that point. And the reason I say the overall goal is to build uncertainty is that's exactly what a Coast Guard helicopter rescue swimmer has to deal with on a daily basis. So the job is inherently uncertain. When you get to work and you're on duty, you hear the SAR alarm go off. You have no idea what the case could be. It could be a person missing in the forest and they have a broken leg. It could be a sailboat offshore sinking. It could be a missing person who got swept off the rocks in a big storm. It could be hurricane response. It could be really anything. And you have no idea what it's going to be until the SAR alarm goes off and you go meet with your pilots to figure out what the plan is. So that can cause, if you're not mentally strong, it's going to cause a lot of stress. So what Coast Guard Helicopter Rescue Swimmer School does, and a lot of these kind of selective military trainings do, is seek ways to create an environment that's uncertain and see how candidates deal with that. And there's so many ways you can create that environment. And I've covered them on my earlier podcast when I went through my book. I covered kind of the different topics or different sections and kind of structures around how they set up a day in swimmer school to make that uncertainty more prevalent. So your overall goal when you're at swimmer school or any of your training, elite military training, you could be going to BUDS or the pararescue pipeline selection, any of that stuff. It is to demonstrate your ability to deal with uncertainty to the instructors. And if you can do that and you have those baseline physical skill sets or physical fitness, you're likely to pass. And that should be your goal right now when you're training for, if you're training right now for any of those trainings or schools, your goal is to build these skill sets that I'm going to cover right now. It's also important to remember that you should be taking the initiative and learning the processes that are the foundational processes behind these workouts. So it's one thing to buy a workout program from someone, go through the program and do the workouts, complete them all, and then kind of say, okay, I'm done, I'm ready for school. It's another thing to buy the workout program, go through it, and then study the program and see what each week is structured like and what the overall goal of each week is. And the overall goal of each day, because some days are different. You're not just going working out to your max every day. That would be unhealthy. That wouldn't be a base building, easy, healthy progression. And sometimes if you purchase multiple programs from different instructors, different people, you'll see an overall kind of pattern where although people have differing kind of approaches to workouts, there is an overall goal that kind of slowly builds a cardiovascular base and a foundational strength base. So I'm going to move into heart rate training zones now. And the kind of the accepted standard for these training zones is it's varying levels of heart rate. So if your heart rate's like 50 to 100, it's like a relaxed, that would be relatively relaxed, like you're sitting on your couch or something. And then you go up to zone 2 and it's like 100 to 126 or 27. And that would be kind of an elevated heart rate where maybe you're walking or slowly jogging. And it kind of progressively increases from zones 1 through 5. And you can use the heart rate as the the indicator for each zone, or you can also use a perceived effort. If you don't like to track your heart rate, if you find that it's too kind of, if you're not a numbers person and you don't want to sit there and stare at your watch as you're working out, you can do a perceived effort training zone setup, and it's a little easier. And that's kind of what I use in the Base Builder and Healthy Progression article that I wrote. And that's what I'm going to kind of cover today. And if you're more of a numbers person, you wear a watch, check your heart rate as you're working out, just go online and check out the different training zones, how they relate to what I'm going to talk about right now. So zone one is essentially just light and easy working out. So you should be able to do this type of training for hours on end and for consecutive days. So this would be like an easy 2 to 3 mile jog. It's something you can do today and you can kind of just stop doing it and do it again maybe in like a couple hours or the next day. And you can kind of do that forever. Like you wouldn't have any negative, there would be no negative ramifications on your health if you kept doing it. It'd be like going for a hike also. That's kind of the heart rate zone you're looking for. Zone two is a sort of moderate heart rate, and this is a workout. This would be an example. This would be a workout that you could perform for 30 to 60 minutes with little rest. And that could be like a swim, for example, where you swim 1,000 to 2,000 meters at like an 80% effort. You could do that swim and you get done and your heart rate's up. You're breathing a little heavier than normal, but you could keep going if you had to. The next zone is zone three. And zone three would be kind of classified as a medium to an easy hard. So this would be a workout that is sort of challenging you to the point where it's fun and kind of really getting that heart rate up, but it doesn't feel too hard to complete or you're not going to your max. And an example of this would be a push-up pull-up pyramid where you're coming just to the point of muscle failure or right before that point. Zone four would be sort of a max sustainable effort for 30 seconds to 8 minutes. So that would be maybe a 400 meter track sprint. So you could hold that sprint for those 400 meters or maybe like roughly a minute 30 to a minute 40 seconds. You could take a few minutes rest and you could do the same thing again. And you could do that not forever, but you could do that for a workout for like six to eight reps. And then the last zone is zone five. And this would be considered a unsustainable or exhaustive effort. So essentially going to your max. And this would be like the hardest you could push your body for any given exercise. So for maybe a 50 meter or 100 meter pool sprint, it would be your full sprint. You get back after 100 meters, you'd be completely gassed and you'd have to take a good rest before being able to hit that max again. You'd have to probably take a 3 to 5 minute rest before you could hit that same 50 meter sprint in the same amount of time that you did the first time. So those are the heart rate training zones. Like I said, if you're more of a numbers person, you want to kind of see where your heart rate lines up and you want to be more accurate and not use a kind of relative or perceived effort scale, just go online and kind of see what that's like. So this kind of relates into another concept called capacity training and utilization training. And this kind of comes back also to the structure of a workout program. And today we're talking about base building or building that cardiovascular and strength base. And base building would be considered capacity training. So capacity training is, well, it's essentially the definition of base building. It's building that aerobic base. And utilization training would be using that base to specialize your training. So this would be, utilization training would be doing buddy toes or doing escapes and releases, practicing for your multis, while capacity training is following a workout plan that slowly builds up your push-up, pull-up, max, and your 1.5 and 500 meter swim times. And largely, you want your training for swimmer school or any of your military training to be focused on capacity training. So just getting your body to the strength and aerobic foundation that it needs to be at to then add on the utilization training specific to your training. So for swimmer school, once you have that base, you start to focus on buddy toes. You start to focus on swimming long distances with your fins. You start to work on doing more water confidence drills. But you can't just immediately go into those kind of more high level conditioning drills and water confidence drills without a strong aerobic and strength base. You could think of it kind of like the 80-20 rule, where 80% of your training should be focused on capacity training and 20% should be utilization training. And kind of the overall goal of setting up a training program and following a base building and healthy progression system is to prevent overuse injuries and build fitness at a sustainable level. And what this looks like is kind of, well, what I'll do is I'll run you through a typical week in one of my base building programs. I'm not going to run through like an individual workout. I'm just going to run through the structure of the workouts for a given week. So this section of the base builder would be focused on improving your runtime. Basically, so Monday morning, you would do a morning PT. So that gets your heart rate up, starts building that strength base. And then after the workout, you do a 5-mile run at a conversational pace. And a 5-mile run at a conversational pace means you're running at a pace where you could have a conversation with your friend next to you. And sometimes this feels a little too easy. You feel like you're not getting the proper workout in that you want to. A lot of times people like to work out to failure just to feel good about themselves and feel like they got something done for the day, when that's not necessarily the most healthy way of working out. And it's not even the most efficient way. It's not going to make you the strongest you can actually be. So running a 5-mile run at a conversational pace builds your aerobic base in a more efficient way than doing 1-mile repeats would. And it has a totally different, there's a totally different goal in mind when you set a run at a conversational pace. When you're doing those easier runs, you're kind of in zones 1 through 3, mostly 1 and 2. And runners like to call it your aerobic base, where your heart rate's elevated to a point where you're burning fat and you're entirely aerobic. You're not using any anaerobic energy, or you're not using ATP to make your muscles move, essentially. On Tuesday, we do a 8x1/4-mile sprints at a 5K goal pace, or 1.5-mile goal pace. And so if you're shooting to run a 1.5 miles in 9 minutes, you would run those 1/4-mile sprints in, let's see, be about a 1:30. So that would be 1:30, and that's not a sprint. That'd probably get you into zone 3 or 4, probably steady in 4 towards the end of the sprint, and then you'd rest 1.5 to 3 minutes, and then you'd repeat that 8 times. And then you do an afternoon pool session, where, or you can do it immediately after the sprints, depending on your schedule. But for that day, the focus would be on that run with a secondary goal on improving your swim time. Although I'm not specifying a certain swim workout you do for that day. You could be doing water confidence. You could be doing a sprint workout or like a long distance swim with fins. A Wednesday would be a PT session or a light weight session focused on strength, followed by a pool session. And you take an off day running just to avoid overuse there. Thursday would be a 4 to 6 mile run at a conversational pace. Again, just working on that aerobic base, and then an afternoon pool session. On Friday, do like a harder morning PT session, since you're going to have the weekend to rest. In most of my base builder, in my base builder program, I always have Saturday and Sundays as a rest day. So Fridays tend to be a little bit harder. So after that PT, you do another 8x1/4-mile sprint session, and you'd, for Friday, you'd be going a little harder. So you'd be going slightly 10 to 15 seconds faster than your goal 1.5-mile pace, or maybe your 2 or 3-mile run, depending on what you're training for. And after those sprints, you do another set of 4x200 meter sprints at 10 to 15 seconds faster than your goal pace. And you could even make that a little bit faster since you're doing, it's only 200 meter sprints. And that's really getting to that zone four, zone five heart rate zone where you're burning up, you're using ATP. And it's largely anaerobic. So that sort of structure would kind of go on for about 8 weeks. And that would be a good training block. And after that training block, you'd take maybe a week to a week and a half of lighter PT, lighter running, just to give your body a chance to absorb that training and kind of strengthen up before advancing onto another training block. And all of this is just to prevent injuries, like I said. So probably the second most likely reason to fail out of rescue swimmer school is going to be injuries. And these injuries often come from shoulder and shin problems. So your shoulder problems are going to be from like around your rotator cuff, and that's going to come from swimming mostly, just too much volume, too fast. And the shin problems are going to be usually shin splints, or some sort of muscle calf, either muscle, kind of the muscle can tear on the bone down there and prevent you from being able to run towards your max effort. And that can kind of hinder your finning ability in the pool for buddy towing. So oftentimes, if you're not using the fins enough and you use them too much in swimmer school, you start developing blisters on your feet, and that's going to make doing any of the training kind of impossible. It's just going to be too painful. So when you're building that base, so if you're in a base building program, or you write your own program, you're in your own first training block, second training block of that base builder, you should overall feel an increase in your energy and strength from week to week. The goal isn't to work out to exhaustion and then be so dead that the second week of training, you don't have the energy to complete the workouts. It should be a slow progression. So if you're not feeling that overall increase in your energy or your ability to complete a workout or the next set of workouts a week or 2 weeks down the line, that means you're probably working out too hard. And you likely need to reassess and restructure your workouts, maybe lighten the volume or increase the rest times so your body can absorb that training. Like I said, if you're feeling weak or hurt from week to week in a base builder style program, you need to stop and just reassess because it's just not sustainable. You're going to end up hurting yourself. It's different when you take that training and you apply it to rescue swimmer school or BUZZ or the PJ selection. If you're in that training and you're starting to feel a decrease in your energy, you're feeling a little, you're getting niggles in your feet or your shoulder. Sometimes you just got to tough through that and get to the end of the training. You know, there's a time for base building and staying healthy, and there's a time for kind of getting the job done. And when you're in your school, that's a time to get the job done. If you have some injuries, you might have to kind of fight through them. But you're less likely to have significant injuries if you're doing a healthy kind of base building program. The last two things I guess I want to talk about are our diet and sleep as they apply to your foundational training. So I don't have any formal education in diet. And because of that, I like to kind of use anecdotal kind of experiences that I have. And then I also recommend that you try out different diets that you have heard of people using that have been successful and see how your body reacts to those and how your energy levels feel throughout the course of the day. Like I said, recently I found a kind of good diet that works for me where if I'm doing sort of a lighter day, lighter cardiovascular day, I won't eat in the morning and I'll do my workout, my lifting, PT, maybe a swim, and then I'll eat after that. So it's like a short fast kind of where I wake up, work out, and then eat around 10 or 11. And then I'll go do whatever I do throughout the course of the day, do some work, go to class, and then I'll eat lunch, and then I'll do like an afternoon workout. Typically an afternoon workout would be either a light run or some stationary cycling right now, or sometimes I'll go rock climbing, and then I'll eat dinner after that. And then I avoid kind of snacking, and then at night I'll eat right kind of like an hour, hour and a half before bed, I'll eat kind of something with some protein and some fat. When I was training for Rescue Swimmer School, I didn't really follow a structured diet. I've talked about that a bunch in the past, so I'm not going to talk about it now. But as it applies to what I do now, basically what I'll eat a kind of more solid breakfast if I'm going to do a long day of running or swimming. So if I go out for like a 15 to 20 mile run, I'll eat a little bit in the morning. I won't fast and run that type of mileage without eating. Although I'm not really running that sort of mileage now. A few months ago I was, and that was working for me. So I'd eat a little bit in the morning, wait about a half an hour, go for the run, come back, and then I'd eat like a big kind of breakfast or lunch. So with your training, just your training and eating, just kind of go through and find what works for you. Now's a good time to cycle through different diets that you think might be effective and apply them to your routine. Last thing I want to talk about is sleep for the base builder. And this, again, varies from person to person. What I found is I get my most kind of optimal performance on about 7 hours of sleep. So don't cut sleep short right now. There's a lot of people, I know on Instagram it's a big thing where people like to talk about how hard they work and how little they sleep. You definitely want to sleep. It's healthy for building muscle and building strength and being focused and alert throughout the course of the day. And if you're not doing those things, you're going to have bad workouts and you're more likely to cheat on your diet. Making training, it's sort of like a downward spiral. Makes training harder, makes you eat worse, and you're going to see negative performance results from that. So now I'm going to move on to the Q&A portion of today's episode. And the first question was, how does time away from family work? And it varies based on where you're at in your career. So obviously when you go to boot camp, you'll be away from your family for 8 weeks. And I'm also assuming this is a family as in maybe your wife or husband and your kids. So after those 8 weeks, they'll probably come to your graduation and then you'll get stationed somewhere. You'll move there together. If you get stationed at a small boat station where I was single, so I didn't have a family or anything to worry about. But you work 2 days on, 2 days off. So those 2 days you're off, you're with your family at home, doing whatever you're like a normal life. And on the 2 days on, you won't see your family. You'll be working those 2 days. And sometimes, depending on where you're at and the workload for the day, your family can come on base and you can have dinner with them, or they can come over after you're done with the work for the day and like hang out. And it just depends on the unit and what the kind of normal routine for that station is. If you're on a cutter, I can't speak too much to this, but I know cutters, they vary in lengths, and so that means they vary in time away from port. But you'll spend a designated time in port. Maybe you spend, if you're on a bigger one, like a couple months or a few months in port, so you'd be living kind of normal work life where you're working in the morning, afternoon, and then you're home at night. And then when you deploy, go on your patrol, maybe you're gone for a few months. I don't even know how long most cutters go since I wasn't on one. But if you go for a few months, you won't see your family, you can't really communicate with them too much. Then you come back and you kind of go back onto that regular workday schedule. And that kind of is a cycle. It repeats until you go to your A school, if you're a non-rate. When you go to Rescue Swimmer School, I'm not 100% on this, but I think they make you stay in the barracks. If you're married, even if you're married, you have to stay in the barracks. But A school basically goes from like 6:30 or 7 in the morning until 4:30 or 5. So after that, you're off. So you could hang out with your family or do whatever. And then once you get to an air station after graduating summer school, if you graduate summer school, you go to a unit and then you work the typical rescue swimmer routine and duty schedule. And I've talked about that a ton in the past, so I'm not going to really cover it now. But you have pretty much a regular work, like a civilian work life where you're working days, and then every maybe two or three times a week, you're standing just your 24-hour duty where you're on base and you don't go home at night, but a lot of times your family can come and hang out with you when you're not working. So that's typically at night. They can like bring you dinner, you can hang out, watch TV or something. So the next question was, what is a typical relationship between rescue swimmers and the pilot? So typically, I know if you're in the military or you know anything about it, you know that enlisted versus officers have a kind of working relationship where you're much more cordial and respectful to the officers because they're in charge of you. And when you get into a helicopter, a lot of the kind of formalities of the officer, and this is with the flight mechanic too. So you have the rescue swimmer and flight mechanic who are enlisted, and then you have two pilots who are officers. That sort of relationship tends to become more almost a casual or like a friendly conversational manner versus a more cordial and courteous manner, where when you're in the helicopter, you want to have everyone communicating fluently and be comfortable talking to their superior because you're worried more about safety and getting the mission done rather than who is ranked higher and who has more time in service or more say. You do weight experience, so a pilot who's been flying for 20 years or a flight mechanic who's been flying for 20 years is going to know a lot more than a new rescue swimmer out of A school. But the rescue swimmer at A school also has a disproportionately large say in the final decision because that's the person getting lowered into the rescue scenario and is going to be in the most danger. So I guess the answer to the question is it's pretty casual, and in the air station, you kind of come back to that formality a bit, but there's also, it's much more lax than say a small boat station or a cutter where those formalities are much more solidified and not as fluid. And another question, this will be the last question I'm going to cover today. And it is there a certain way you have to talk to instructors in A school? So I guess this, you could compare it to boot camp where you have a set way to talk to instructors depending on how far into boot camp you are. And I would say A school is similar to that, except for it's a more relaxed version of that. So you're still addressing your instructors how you would in boot camp, but you don't have to do it as frequently and you don't have to be as thorough with the way you talk. You can kind of talk more person to person. And this also depends on where you're at in training. So if you're in a classroom setting and they're trying to teach you something, it's going to be more relaxed versus when you're on the PT grinder and they're grilling you when you're doing push-ups or something. That's going to be more formal and you're going to have to demonstrate that you have the ability to maintain that dynamic or that relationship between you and the instructor while you're in an uncomfortable position, and that's like doing heavy PT or water confidence. And that gets back to that uncertainty where the instructors want to see if you can keep your composure and keep your mental state focused, even though you're doing these insane water confidence drills and you don't know when they're going to end. And I'm going to end the Q&A portion there for this week, and I'll answer some more questions next week as they come in throughout the week. So if you have one, just send me a DM or email, and I'll throw it in on the list. Like I said, if you're interested in reading that whole base building and healthy progression article that I wrote, I'm going to throw that back up on the website and I'll leave the link in the show notes, and I'll also post it to Instagram once I put it back up, which should be up by the time you're listening to this. If you're interested in checking out the training programs I offer a base building program and a intro program. So you can go to rsmguide.com, go to products in the upper right-hand corner, and you can read through the description of what those programs are like. The intro program is going to be for anyone who can't pass the PT test currently and is looking to get their fitness to the level where they can pass it. And if you can pass it, you can do the base builder program where you're kind of doing what we talked about today. You're building your aerobic and strength base. So like I said, just go check those out if you're interested. On next week's episode, I'm going to cover a pretty cool study that I've been reading on mindset and how it relates to elite military training. It's really cool and fascinating stuff. Sort of long, so I'm going through taking notes, and I hope to have it ready to share with you for next Tuesday's episode. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, go to the Apple Podcast page, leave a rating and review. And that's all I have for today. With that said, be good. I'll talk to you next week.